comes. Chapter 38. Wednesday, 7th of February, 11:17 p.m. Kira drove fast along the rain-washed city streets, shadows and images taunting her at the periphery of her vision. A homeless man shuffled along with his hoard of plastic bags. He was real, surely? Or was it a memory she had picked up from Ray? As she moved through the tall grey buildings, travelling alongside her was an army jeep covered in desert camouflage. The driver saluted her. She quickly focused on the road ahead, ignoring the phantom, gripping the steering wheel tightly. She couldn't lose it now, not when she was so close to finding Isabel. She swerved to avoid two little children who stepped off the pavement and into the path of her car. She could see their small, pale faces staring after her in the rearview mirror as she drove on. "They're not real," she said out loud. "I'm going to find Isabel. I am going to find her." She checked her mirror to see if the children were still there and was met by the gruesome sight of Emma, battered and bloodied, sitting on the back seat, peering back at her, her white face marked with the striations of removed duct tape, like sand ripples on a beach. Kira jolted the steering wheel in shock, and the car mounted the pavement, juddering with the impact. She righted the vehicle, her heart fluttering in her chest. Her eyes flicked to the mirror again. Emma was gone. Releasing the pressure on the accelerator slightly, she focused on the road. It had taken less than 3 minutes to find his name. "When you know," her dad used to say. Then literally seconds on the miniscreen for the directions for the address that April from the hospital had given her. Immediately, an estate agency website had come up, showing photos from some years back, a tumble-down house and a garage on a few acres of land out in the suburbs. For some reason, it had been almost immediately taken off the market again. Kira told her comset to guide her, and within minutes, she was heading to Drayton Lane, Stephen's home. "I'm coming for you, Moles. I'll be there as soon as I can." Soon, this would all be over. She would no longer be host to all these memories that were haunting her, tormenting her. The dark, shadowy figures of memories that were not her own, constantly distracting her now, would disappear forever. It was this case driving her mad, pushing her to her limits. But she was going to solve the case and defeat them for good. Most importantly, she would have Molly back, and she would have justice for her sister. Then, she would get on with her life, take her mum and Molly on holiday, have a break before finding a new job, one where she wasn't beholden to some ignorant businessman and his money. She drove further out to the suburbs, away from the city lights, and out into darker, tree-lined roads which gave way to lanes with hedges running down both sides. A fine rain began, and her windscreen wipers swiped intermittently. "You have reached Drayton Lane," her comset stated, startling her. She pulled up to the side of the road but couldn't see any buildings beyond the greenery. Her breath caught in her throat, and she cowered when she saw a figure behind her car. It was a soldier, standing to attention, his eyes locked straight ahead of him, gun slung across his body. She swore, angry with herself for being so timid. How could she face the killer if she was frightened by these projections of her own brain? Overgrown bushes concealed whatever lay behind. One or two ancient lampposts emitted a weak light. She drove to the end of the lane, and then turned the car around and drove back, slower this time, window down, leaning forward in her seat, hoping that Linden House was still there, that it hadn't been demolished, the bricks and wood repurposed. Just as her frustration was becoming intolerable, a white figure appeared amidst the hedges, giving off a spectral glow which lit the greenery around her like a religious grotto. She took her foot off the accelerator in shock, and the car rolled slowly forward towards the apparition. It was Skylar Landry. Kira switched the engine off, got out of the car, and slammed the door hard, but Skylar remained, motionless, eyes shut, white dress dripping with water, the form of her body visible beneath the wet material, her porcelain face a death mask. Kira moved closer to her. From this position, she could see a wrought iron gate covered by leaves. Was Skylark guiding her towards Isabel? She steeled herself, her hand trembling as she reached out to open it, centimetres from the ghostly woman, trying to reassure herself that it was all in her mind. Skylar's eyes flicked open, her eyes ice blue, lashes encrusted with tiny ice crystals. Kira jumped back in fright, and the glowing figure disappeared, only to reappear on the other side of the wrought iron. All Kira's instincts were telling her to get back in her car and drive away. But Molly was close, she was sure of it, and it gave her the courage to go on, to force the stiff, rusted latch and push the gate, which would only open enough for her to slide in. The moment she was through, Skylar disappeared and it was dark again. Once on the other side, breathless with fear and anticipation, Kira peered around in the gloom. She flicked on her comset light. The driveway was a patchwork of bricks set unevenly into the earth, greasy underfoot with the misty rain. It was a mechanic's yard, littered with carcasses of old motors and dismantled engines. A driveway stretched out in front of her to a set of double gates on the far side. There was a large workshop with wide doors that were open, showing space for three cars. She could imagine it back in the day, the purr of engines, the mechanics dark with oil, the banter. But now it was dark and silent. The only car, a rusted old red Ford Focus, a dent in the bonnet. Molly, where are you? Skylar appeared again, standing at bushes at the far end of the yard. Kira made her way over, feeling less afraid of the apparition now. The moment she moved, Skylar disappeared. Kira scrambled through the bushes, and there, on the other side of the overgrown foliage, was a house in total darkness, except for Skylar, who appeared as a glowing form at the front door. Molly would be locked in a room here, afraid but unharmed. Kira had to believe that so that she could keep going. She moved towards the house. What the hell was she going to see in there? If I call Alex, will she come? She remembered Alex's last words to her. Mental. She was on her own. The front door was shut fast, and so she made her way around the building. Every window was pitch black. She reached the back of the house. The only light she could see were the intermittent flashes from her own migraine. She reached the back door, listening for any signs of life. Not a single sound in the thick darkness. The door gave way beneath her fingers. Did he know she was coming? Was he waiting for her in the silence? She stood back, bracing herself, as though she expected someone to come flying out of the darkness at her. But there was no movement, so she stepped into the house. She was standing in a kitchen. She noticed a shuffling in the corner of her eye, and she saw two little faces peeping out from under the table, a boy and a girl. She ignored them and continued her search, her eyes skittering over the draining board, a single plate, one cup. A Perimed uniform hung on a coat hanger on a cupboard door, an iron nearby, unplugged, cold. There was a single chair by the table. A few clean plates stood on the drainer by the sink, and the tap was dripping. The water was still connected. There was an old-style gas hob cooker on which sat a small pan containing congealed beans. The light from the fridge dazzled her when she opened the door. There was a half pint of milk, some cheese, children's yogurts, still in date. Someone had been here recently. What if they were still here? Come on, Kira, pull yourself together. You can do this. She moved through the kitchen into the hallway and stood in the hall listening, her desperation to find Molly and Isabel rising and swelling along with her fear. Maybe he's not here. He might have gone out. Maybe I can find Molly and Isabel and get them somewhere safe. He's Tom's problem. If I can find them before he comes back. The front room was sparse, containing only a sofa, a screen, a small table. There was an empty set of shelves gathering dust. The hairs on the back of her neck stood up as she heard a thud in the hall. She switched off her comset light and stood in the darkness listening. Something was in the house with her. Being unfamiliar with the layout, she was uncertain of her escape route. Even with the added flood of adrenaline, she didn't feel confident of her flight ability. Her legs already felt like jelly. She heard a muffled sound. Was that someone crying? Was it Isabel, hurt and trapped somewhere? Where was Molly? Molly's going to be fine. She doesn't fit the pattern. She's too tall. She's not a nurse or... She's going to be fine. Fine. She just hoped she was in time for Isabel. She crept back into the hallway and stood still for a few moments, listening, terrified. The sound was coming from a cupboard in the hall. She took a deep breath and flung the door open. A large grey cat flew out of the cupboard, startling her. He looked her over, his yellow eyes glinting in the shadows, and then strolled away. She bent over, somewhat relieved, and when she stood up, she noticed there was another door inside the cupboard. The round knob rattled, but the door didn't give. She felt along the top of the frame and her fingers hit a key which unlocked the door easily with a loud click. Kira opened the door and shone her light down the steps into a cellar, but she could only see as far as a brick wall at the bottom. She took a breath as though she was about to dive into a deep, dark pool. Emma, please, please help me. Help me find Isabel. Help me get the bastard who took you away from us. Help me find Molly. Chapter 39. Wednesday, 7th of February, 11:47 p.m. Her fingertips hit the rough brick wall at the bottom, and she went to her right, moving her feet out in front of her in circular motions, blindly feeling for the floor, her comms watch throwing out a small beam of light which trembled. The cellar stretched out into darkness. In front of her she could see a red generator and a pair of long metal drawers, long enough to hold a body. She moved towards them, her heart pounding. Was Isabel already dead? Was she too late? A sudden searing pain ripped through her as her hip caught a sharp corner and there was an almighty metallic crash. She froze, the sound still ringing in her ears. She waited, tense and alert in the darkness for an attack. Blinding lights, explosive gunshot. Nothing. Looking down, she gasped in terror at the sight of a metal trolley lying on its side, and in the pool of light at her feet lay the shards and serrations of an assortment of metal surgical equipment. Scalpels, clamps, bone cutters and levers, forceps, cannulae, curettes. She retched twice and stood for a moment, trying to regain use of her body. She moved towards the metal drawers again and stopped dead when she saw, on another metal trolley, a turquoise gift box, glittering in the light of her comset, a lime green ribbon next to it. Her guts cramped, cold and tight. The lid lay at an angle across the top, leaving the box half open. Kira took a step closer, flinching as she poked the lid away and quickly moved back as though the contents might jump out at her. Slowly she leaned over at a distance and shone her light in. It was empty. Was there still time? Breathing heavily, she focused on the drawers. Stretching her hand out, she pulled the handle of the bottom drawer, bracing herself. There was a metallic clunk as it released and slid out easily. The tray was empty, reflecting her light in a dull haze on the brushed steel. Kira dropped her hands to her sides and took a few deep breaths. She reached for the handle of the top drawer and tugged, but it resisted. Her heart sank. I'm too late, Isabel. I'm so sorry. She slid the drawer out, and on the tray, covered in a white cotton smock, lay a slim body, the face covered with a white pillowcase. Tom had been right. She had messed up her career, risked her health, and broken her relationships, and for what? All of it had been for nothing. Slowly she peeled back the pillowcase. For a moment, she couldn't make sense of what she was seeing. It wasn't Isabel. It wasn't Isabel at all. Kira gazed in horror at the face of her niece, Molly. She reached out to touch her but stopped before she made contact. It was only a phantom. She was so overwrought of late, upset with the way things had been going with Molly. This was only her brain's way of expressing her anxiety. Wasn't it? Kira looked closer, the pale skin of her face surrounded by her dark hair, her eyes closed as if she were sleeping. Kira was immediately thrown back to the moment at the mortuary when she had had to identify Emma's body, holding onto her dad's arm, willing it not to be Emma, but knowing it was. She was taken back to when she would stroke Molly's hair, Emma's hair, as they settled down to sleep, comforting them as they drifted off. Her hand trembled as she reached out to touch the dark curls, hoping the awful vision in front of her would disappear. But it didn't. She could feel the soft curls underneath her fingertips telling her something she didn't want to know, the worst possible thing. This was not a phantom. She let out a howl, her legs collapsing under her, and she slumped to the floor, feeling as though her heart had been ripped from her body. She had not been there for her sister when she had died, and now Molly too had died alone. He had taken them both from her. She could hardly breathe with grief and guilt. She had led the killer to her precious Molly. How could she tell her mother this? She stood up and took hold of the sheet, needing to know, but dreading finding out. Had he taken her hands? Was that what the box was for? She wanted to tell her how sorry she was, how she should have cared for her better, how, if she was still alive, she would do things differently. She would listen more, be more loving. She pulled the sheet back. Molly still had her hands crossed over her chest as though ready for burial. Kira broke down, huge sobs racking her chest, tears flowing, dripping onto the shroud over her niece's body. She took hold of Molly's hand. It was warm. Hope and desperation flooded her veins as she put her ear to Molly's chest. A heartbeat. Slow, but steady. Molly! Molly! She cried, kissing her soft skin, her tears falling onto her niece's cheeks. Oh, thank God! Kira shook her niece by the shoulders. Molly's eyes flickered. Molls, come on. It's me. It's Key. What had he done to her? Nearby she saw syringes in a kidney dish. Molls, she tried again, shaking her. Her niece moaned, opened her eyes a little, and then shut them again. How could she get Molly out of that awful cellar? There was a small window, high up on the wall, but there was no way she could get Molly to that, never mind push her through it. Could she manage to carry her up the stairs? But there was no way she could run with Molly in her arms. If he came back... Oh, and then what about Isabel? She still didn't know if Isabel was still alive. She looked down at her comms watch, 11:53 p.m. If Isabel was still alive somewhere in this house, then Kira had less than 10 minutes to get to her. She didn't care what Tom thought of her now. She had to call him, for Molly's sake. There was no reply. Call Alex. Alex wasn't answering either. Mental. She left a message. Alex, please, you have to help me. I'm at Drayton Lane. There's an old garage. There's a house. It's hidden behind the bushes, hard to see. Molly's here. He's drugged her. Please come now. She stood for a moment and then dialed 999 and begged for the police and the perimed services to come and help. The moment the light from her comms watch call faded, she panicked. What if Alex didn't get her message, or worse still, didn't believe her? What if the police and the ambulance couldn't find them? Had she told them they were in the house behind the garage? She couldn't remember now. How long would they take to get there? And what about Isabel? Was she still here? She wasn't in the other drawer. Did that mean she was still alive? She looked at her comms watch again. 5 minutes until midnight. Kira's eyes travelled back to Molly again. She was out of it and would probably be like that for some time. She could stay here and wait. Or she could go and look for Isabel. She had sacrificed so much already to get here. She couldn't stop now. All her instincts went against what she was about to do. Moles, baby, I'm so sorry, but I promise, I'll come back very soon. She stroked her hair and watched her sleeping for a moment. An image of 3-year-old Molly standing at the side of the road came into her mind. Kira slowly pushed the mortuary drawer half closed again, her heart breaking. Moving towards the door, her foot kicked metallic objects. She bent down and felt along the dusty floor until her hand hit metal. She picked it up and pointed her comset to it. It was a scalpel, the blade sharp and shiny in the light. She curled her fingers around it, stood up, and took a deep breath. Her footsteps slow and steady, she made her way back up the stairs to the main hall, shining her light into the dark rooms and peering in as she passed, the overwhelming smell of dust and damp filling her nose. Standing at the bottom of the stairs, her hand on the newel post, she blinked up into the dark void above. She was going to find Isabel. Chapter 40. Wednesday, 7th of February, 2035, 11:58 p.m. The creaking of the stairs as she climbed to the top floor was echoed by the unfamiliar bird cries in the darkness outside. There was no decoration, no photos, no mirrors, just empty frames hanging on the walls. Kira shone her light up at the ceiling. There was a loft hatch, but it had been nailed shut, ancient paint sealing the wood. No one had been up there for a long time. The main bedroom was simple, like a monk's cell, with muted neutral colours, a single bed, a small wardrobe, and a tall set of drawers. The only decoration was an old framed photograph of a boy and a girl, the same blue-grey eyes and mousy hair, his arm around her. It was the two children she'd seen under the bed. She checked under the bed and, whilst she was down there, tapped around the floorboards, looking for any place where Isabel might be hidden. Midnight would bring Isabel's death. She might be dead already. The second bedroom was empty, with an ancient, thin cord carpet and a simple rolled-up blind. There was no bed in this room, only a wardrobe, the doors open, not even a single hanger inside. The next room she came to, the key was in the lock. It twisted with ease, and she pushed open the door, holding the scalpel out in front of her in her trembling hand. The temperature rose noticeably when she entered. There was a single white bed with a duvet with a pink cotton cover and pretty floral curtains, a rocking chair, teddies, a nightlight still glowing. What did it mean? Why was there one beautiful room in a house that hadn't been loved or cared for in years? She lifted the bedclothes, and the hairs on the back of her neck stood up. The floorboards creaked behind her. She swiveled around and saw, at the other end of the hall, a little girl, standing in front of a closed door. The same girl she had seen under her bed. How could she forget that face, the huge, terrified eyes? Kira steeled herself. The little girl stood in an eerie glow, the rest of the house silent and black. She lifted a hand and beckoned Kira. Slowly, wondering how she was managing to put one foot in front of the other, she moved towards the girl. Was this phantom like Skylar, guiding her towards Isabel? The child remained still and Kira reached out a hand. Her fingers moved through the spectral vision which shimmered like disturbed water as she pushed the door open. Inside was a bathroom. The soft glow of candlelight reflected off the glassy surface of the water in the bathtub, which was filled to the brim and surrounded by pink roses and candles, the wax dripping down the sides. There were more candles and roses on the basin and the window ledge. A red box floated on the water, glittering in the wavering light, the ribbon tied into a bow on top. A row of chains hung from the rail, which had once held a shower curtain. Suspended from each thread of silver was half a mitzvah pendant. Four. One for each of the victims found in water. One for Skylar, one for Jennifer, one for Amelia, and one for Isabel. Kira moved closer to look, and from this angle, looking down, she saw that the box wasn't floating at all, but resting on something previously hidden beneath the refracted light bouncing off the surface. Isabel. Kira dropped the scalpel, dumped the box on the floor, and reached into the water. She put her hands underneath Isabel's armpits and managed to pull her up far enough to get her head out. But the angle at which she stood gave her no strength, and Isabel slipped beneath the surface again. Kira stepped into the shockingly cold water, feet either side of Isabel's slim body, pulled the plug and tried again to lift her, this time sitting Isabel up, her top half slumped forward. Kira had no idea whether or not she was still alive. She was struggling to hold Isabel's head above the water, and the bath was draining too slowly. How long could she stand this cold? Nearby she saw three syringes, two of which were empty. Could Isabel still be alive? Was she drugged like Molly was? How long had she been in the water? If it hadn't been long, that meant that the killer could still be nearby. Determined, she placed her hands underneath Isabel's armpits again, and with all her strength she heaved. Her feet gave way on the smooth surface beneath her and she slipped, falling onto Isabel. She pulled herself up again, soaked with freezing water. Isabel, she yelled. Come on, wake up. She struggled with her body, pulling and twisting until Isabel was hanging forward over the side of the bath, her hands touching the soaking wet bathroom floor. Kira climbed out of the water, lifted Isabel's legs and swiveled them over the side of the bath. Isabel slumped to the floor like a newborn foal. Panting heavily, Kira pushed Isabel onto her back and listened for any signs of life. Nothing. Come on, Isabel, she shouted. She made a fist and banged on the girl's chest, which made a wet, slapping noise. She began to shiver as the water on her body met the cold air. Moving Isabel's head back and pushing her chin down, Kira breathed into her mouth five times and then started chest compressions. Her hands were so cold she could hardly feel them as they pushed against Isabel's small ribcage. She put her ear to Isabel's chest again. No heartbeat. Come on, Isabel. We can't let him win. Breathe. Please breathe. She blew into Isabel's mouth again and gave another 30 chest compressions, continuing the cycle of breathing and pressing until she was sweating, even though her body was shaking with cold from being wet through. Finally, exhausted, she placed her ear to Isabel's chest and heard the faint thump, thump, thump. Isabel started to cough up water. She was disoriented and moaning quietly, her arms flailing weakly, when Kira, wet and exhausted, leaned against the bath and pulled Isabel to her chest to hold her. You're okay. You're okay, Kira said over and over. When she got her breath back, Kira, still shivering violently through shock and cold, laid Isabel down gently and went to the bedroom for a blanket to keep her warm while they waited for the emergency services that she was sure would be there soon. The little nightlight had gone out, and the room was creepy in the moonlight. She pulled out her comm set from her back pocket and tried to flick on the light, but water had gotten into it and it was dead. Where was the ambulance? Why weren't they here by now? Had Alex got her message? She grabbed the duvet and moved back towards the bathroom, stopping momentarily on the landing to see if she could hear anything. Now she had found Isabel, her concern was for Molly. What if the drugs had got the better of her and her heart had stopped? She would wrap Isabel up and then go down to check on Molly. She hurried back to Isabel, whose teeth were chattering, her skin goose-fleshed. Her eyes were rolling and she was mumbling incoherently. Kira bent over her and put the duvet around her, stroking her cheek as she said, "Don't worry. I'm going to get you out of here as soon as I can."
"I don't think so," came a quiet, calm voice from behind her.
Startled, she fell backwards and looked up. The last time she had seen this face had been 15 years ago at the Eco Recycling Centre, as he had sat in the driver's seat of the ambulance. "Stephen Fenwick," she exhaled. His short brown hair was brushed neatly over to the right, clean-shaven, the hint of a cleft chin. His features were normal, except for a scar over one of his eyes, which had turned his iris a cloudy pale blue, like an opal. He looked serene and terrifying. Isabel was pale and shivering, but still breathing. How could Kira protect her now? Oh God, Molly downstairs on her own. Was she still alive? "What have you done to my niece?" She launched herself up towards him, but he had the advantage of being upright. There was a sudden, forceful blow to her ribs, a cracking sound as Stephen kicked her hard, winding her, and then he pulled her up by the hair and grabbed her in a chokehold. She struggled against him for a moment, then brought her elbow backwards, digging into his ribs. He made an oof sound and let go of her. She pulled away from him. "I know all about you, Stephen," she croaked, scrambling against the side of the bathtub. She needed answers, whatever was going to happen to her.
"What do you know?"
he said quietly, standing upright now, his hands poised in front of him as though he was going to grab her again.
"Why did you become a perimed, Stephen?"
she asked, rubbing her throat, her ribs burning with pain.
"You aren't smart enough to be a doctor."
"Ah, the urban myth that serial killers are all geniuses. Is that what you think of yourself?" He turned his face one way, then the other, all the time keeping his right eye locked on her.
"I became a paramedic to save people."
There was no hint of irony.
"No, you hide behind a facade of helping people. That's how you get your victims, isn't it?"
Kira asked as she stood up and faced him.
"People who are in trouble, in pain, who need you. Do you like being needed, Stephen? If you like saving people, then why don't you save Isabel's life?"
He rolled his shoulders.
"Isabel has a job to do and she's going to do it," he said with chilling calmness and control. "No one's going to prevent that happening." "You're not the biggest guy in the world, Stephen," she goaded, trying to catch her breath between the words. Could she wind him up, get him off balance? It was a risk, but the alternative was that he would kill them all and soon. Could she keep him talking until help turned up? If he focused on her, then he might forget about Molly.
"They're coming for us, aren't they?
You always pick small women. Is that so you can overcome them easily?"
When this didn't hit home, she added,
"Was your mother small, Stephen? I bet your dad could really get stuck into her."
She was guessing, but his expression changed. He grabbed her and threw her up against the bathroom wall, hard, and roared at her.
"He's to blame. He might not have done it with his own hands, but he's to blame."
His face was ugly with anger. She glanced at the floor, trying to locate the scalpel.
"But you're no better than him," she provoked. "You pick small women and overcome them, hurt them, degrade them. You learned a thing or two from your dad, eh?"
"It wasn't my dad,"
Stephen screamed, pressing against her harder. It was my mother's boyfriend. David Lomax and I are nothing alike. Stephen's face changed, as though the words had somehow burnt his mouth. David Lomax. If I had my time over, I would go back and kill the bastard. He punched the wall behind her head and she trembled. Is that why you framed him? Made it look like he did it? She asked, trying to hide her fear. Could she keep him talking until help showed up? Help's coming, isn't it? Stephen straightened up, took a breath, as though he was trying to regain control of himself. He has to suffer for what he did to my family.
But you're making Isabel suffer too, and all those other women.
Kira could hear herself begging. He calmed down then and stood still for a moment before giving a sinister smile. I heard what you said to your sister a long time ago in the cafe. Another bad mother. He shook his head at her and tutted. Your judgment, not mine. Kira's heart jolted. How did he know about that? Had he been there in the cafe and then taken Emma? Your judgment. What had he meant by that? And yet, there is Molly, downstairs, young, beautiful, innocent, he said, raising his eyebrows as he spoke. Her stomach twisted into a knot.
Don't you hurt her, she began. Jesus, please let her still be alive.
He jumped forwards, grabbed her roughly by the neck and pushed her over to the bath and hissed into her ear, It's too late for all of you. The bath hadn't drained, the plug hole stoppered with melted wax. He forced her face down into the ice-cold water. She struggled against his strong grip, panic rising hot and quick. She tried to kick out with her legs, but her feet kept slipping on the wet tiles. Her lungs were straining now with the need to inhale. But his strong, determined hands held her steady. Weakened by pain and broken by the thought that she might have condemned her own sister by her words, Kira already felt herself defeated. Her strength was gone. A moment later, he pulled her up by the hair. As she started to regain her breath, he whispered, Don't worry. I know you love her. I'll make sure to give her your heart. I've got the box ready and waiting. And he pushed her head beneath the surface once more. She flailed weakly against him, her arms windmilling in desperation, the water in her ears making everything sound muted, otherworldly. As the lack of oxygen started to affect her brain, she panicked more, fighting as hard as she could. But it was pointless. He had won. Then came a stillness in her mind, where all the meaningless everyday tasks and events, the plans she had had once for her life, the worries of the future, the work and the pain disappeared, and all she could think about was those she loved, her mum, her dad, Emma, Molly. She had failed them all. The cold had crept throughout her body now. A darkness was settling in her mind. She had tried. All the sacrifices, all the effort, it had come to nothing. The cold became an aching pain in every part of her body. She felt herself giving up, giving in to the darkness, letting go. The hands around her neck released the pressure and then twitched. Stephen lurched forward, crushing her ribs against the side of the bath, and then he let go. Her survival instinct, that seemed to have failed her moments before, kicked in and she reared up out of the water. She took time to get her breath back, desperately sucking in the air, wiping the water out of her eyes. She spun around, bracing herself. Stephen was slumped to the floor. Molly stood at the bathroom door, holding a surgical hammer, her white gown and pale aspect making her appear spectral.
Oh my God, Molly!
Kira struggled up and went to move towards her. Her niece was still drugged, but there was recognition in her eyes.
Molly, we've got to get out of here.
Kira looked round to Isabel lying on the floor. Stephen looked out of it, but Kira couldn't leave her there. Stephen suddenly reared up and grabbed Kira's arm, digging his fingers in painfully. He used her to lever himself up and, still grasping Kira, knocked Molly to the floor with a hard punch. He turned to Kira, blood from the wound that Molly had inflicted pouring down his face, the whites of his eyes and his teeth showing through the crimson as he leered at her demonically. He swung her around to face the water again. She ducked down to her knees so he couldn't push her over the side, and as she tried to wrestle her arm free from his clutches, patted her other hand around on the wet bathroom floor and finally found cold metal. She took a swipe and missed, but the second time she felt the blade make contact, scraping along bone in his face. Then came the snap of the blade. He yelled in pain and loosened his grip, then fell to the floor, motionless. Exhausted and weak, Kira slumped to the ground next to Molly, who was groaning by the bathroom door. She put her arms around her niece and held her tightly. Kira looked over at Isabel, still wrapped up in the duvet. She had opened her eyes and her expression was one of confusion. Next to them, Stephen Fenwick lay motionless, a scalpel protruding from one eye socket, the other milky blue eye staring blindly. An unbroken circle of silent women surrounded them. Jennifer, Madeline, Jessica, the unknown woman, Amelia, Skylar, Kaylee and Emma. They gazed down lovingly at Kira. No sadness now, no fear, only peace. She could feel that their pain and anguish had gone. They smiled as she held Molly and cried her heart out. Chapter 41. Thursday, 8th of February, 2035, 9:16 a.m. Even though her eyes were still closed, Kira could tell it was a bright day. She felt the cotton sheets beneath her fingertips and the pillow soft underneath her aching head. There was an excruciating pain in her ribs when she inhaled deeply. Should she open her eyes? What if she were to see pink floral curtains, a rocking chair, a nightlight? She was relieved to see, instead, the white of the clinical sheets and the hospital monitoring equipment next to her bed. On the wall in front of her, a screen was on silent. An antiques program showing ugly ceramic figures with outrageous price tags. She'd made it out of that hellhole somehow. Where was Molly? Had Isabel survived? Her memories of last night hadn't kicked in yet, as though her brain needed time to reboot. Kira. Jimmy sat in the chair next to her hospital bed. He pulled himself upright and shuffled the chair closer. You're awake, he said softly. She lifted a few fingers, waving a feeble hello. Molly, was all she could manage to say. She's here, downstairs, in another ward. She's going to be fine. Kira took a deep breath, winced, and then smiled. He injected her, she began. An image of the mortuary drawer burst into her mind. The syringes, the horror when she had seen Molly lying as though dead. The hairs on her arm stood up. We know. The doctors are taking good care of her. Your mum is with her. She's going to be okay. He fiddled with his comset. I promised your mum I'd message her when you woke up. Isabel? He opened his mouth to speak, but the door was flung open and two children burst in, a young boy and a little girl. Kira's whole body stiffened, accentuating her pain. A swarm of anxiety overwhelmed her. No, no, no. I thought all this would end when he was caught. Why was she seeing them now? After all, it was all over. Are you all right? But Jimmy wasn't talking to her. The children stopped still and stared at Kira. The little girl pointed at her and said something unintelligible. Are you in the wrong room? Jimmy asked. He could see them. Kira exhaled, relieved. A woman bustled in carrying a balloon, a water bottle, a potted plant in gift wrap paper, a child's rucksack and a handbag. "Granddad's next door," she chastised, juggling all the items she was carrying to free up her own hand so that she could take hold of the younger child. "I'm sorry. All these doors look the same. So sorry." She pulled the children towards the door, apologised again, and they all shuffled out. Kira's heart was beating hard, the pain in her ribs throbbing in time. "Isabel's going to be fine too," Jimmy said, "thanks to you. She's in the ICU, but she's doing well." Kira lay back on the cool cotton, a glimmer of relief breaking through, one that she knew she would relish once she was out of pain and the exhaustion had passed, when she'd had time to make sense of everything that had happened. Finally, she dared to ask the question that she was afraid to. She needed to know. Did we get him?" "You got him," he said quietly, firmly, his eyes gleaming. She let that sink in for a moment. He's in the hospital wing of a secure prison for now, but he's going down for good." She closed her eyes again, content, and let herself relax into the mattress. Safe now. She opened her eyes and was met by his concerned expression. He looked away quickly. "Jimmy, what's wrong?" He shook his head in reply. "Nothing. Everything's fine." "He's not getting out, is he?" "No, no," he patted her hand. "I'm going to be okay, aren't I?" But he took a little too long to answer. "Jimmy? We'll have to see how things go when you're out of here. Your brain has been through a trauma. We can't even scan you. The MOD confiscated Cassandra." The very idea of the lab made her feel physically ill. But the thought of her tech, all her hard work, taken by people who couldn't even begin to understand its applications, its effects, its consequences, ignited a rage in her. Without the kid, Fennig, the man who had killed her beloved Emma, murdered and mutilated all those women and ruined so many lives, would never have been caught. Isabel Marsden wouldn't be alive. Justice would not have been served. She couldn't allow herself the luxury of imagining what good the tech might have been able to do in the future, in the right hands. But what price had she herself paid? How long would it take her to recover? Not only from the fear and stress of being attacked by Fennig, but from the side effects of the technology. "We could build a new one." "Come on, Kira. Don't you think the tech has done enough damage? We can't let this happen to someone else."
"What do you mean, not let this happen to someone else?" she said, alarmed. "Jimmy, I am going to get better, aren't I?"
His eyes met hers.
"These phantoms, they'll go now he's been caught," she said. Was she trying to convince herself or him? "They're psychological projections caused by trauma, that's all. Now the stress is off."
"You're the neurologist. There might be more to it than that."
"No, I'm going to be fine," she insisted. When he didn't say anything, she repeated, "Jimmy, I'm going to be fine. We'll find somewhere new to work together when I get out of here. Start our own business."
"Yes, yes," he nodded. But she knew him too well. There was a knock on the door.
"Jimmy, don't tell them, please."
He didn't answer.
Kira's mother pushed Molly into the room in a wheelchair. Jimmy stood up.
"I'll give you guys a bit of space," he said, and kissed the top of Kira's head gently before leaving. Once the wheelchair was close to the bed, Molly launched herself out and flung herself across Kira.
"Oh my God, Key, Key," she cried.
Kira put her arms around her and held her tightly. It made the pain in her ribs worse, but it was worth it. The look on her mother's face reminded her of the time she was 8,
and she had got lost in the park, simultaneously angry and relieved.
"Is she all right?" Kira asked her mum, rubbing Molly's back.
"The doctor says it's out of her system now. We'll have to keep an eye on her, but she'll be fine. They've set up a counselling and support programme for her."
Her mother's voice rose half an octave.
"The pair of you have had me out of my mind," she cried. "Honestly, love, you've been acting so strangely lately. That bloody Tom Morgan. You're always upset when he's around."
Tom? Did he know what had happened last night? Had he checked his comset, seen her missed call? She couldn't remember.
"Sorry, Mum."
"I think you'd better come and stay with us for a while," her mother insisted. "The doctor says you're going to have to take it easy, and you'll need someone to look after you. Maybe only for a while, though," Kira smiled.
"I lost Emma. I thought I was going to lose you two as well," her mother whispered.
Kira took hold of her hand. Molly sat up. She appeared more cheerful now, although her face was white with dark shadows under her eyes.
"Are you going to come and live with us, Key? That would be great. We can watch films, share clothes."
"We'll talk about it when I'm out of here," she said.
"Come on, that's enough for now. Let Kira have a rest," her mother added.
"We got him, didn't we, Key?"
Molly's face was serious and childlike at the same time.
"We did, Moles. Nice work with that hammer," she said, the corners of her mouth turning up into a smile.
Molly beamed. Kira turned serious then.
"He'll die in prison."
"It's what he deserves," Molly said flatly.
"We'll come and see you later," her mother said, turning towards the door.
"You were great," Kira said as her mum wheeled Molly out. Jimmy came back in and sat on the chair next to the bed. The screen in front of them was showing a news pop of Fenig's arrest, footage of Linden House. It looked very different in the daylight, with police vehicles on the garage forecourt and officers swarming over it. Nowhere near as terrifying as it had been the previous night. Memories began swimming in her mind like jetsam that she had deliberately discarded, but were now washing up on the shoreline of her consciousness. The banging sounds as the police broke down the door, people shouting her name, her own voice screaming as she saw the perimed, the uniform terrifying her, shouts of, "She's here," as they unwrapped Isabel from the duvet, herself wrestling with the perimed who was trying to help Molly. Then Tom, his arms around her, holding her, his soothing words. She remembered clinging to him as he helped her down the stairs, Molly being carried out on a stretcher and placed in the ambulance. But after that, she didn't recall.
"Tom came for me," she said simply.
"He rang me, told me what had happened, that they'd brought you here."
"Did he say anything else?"
Jimmy looked down and then up again. His eyes met hers. "He said he was sorry." She nodded.
"It doesn't matter now, anyway."
At that moment, Tom came onto the screen.
"Volume up," Kira said.
"Yes, mistakes have been made, and we must take responsibility for some of that. Our department is fully committed to working with all witnesses, without prejudice, to bring about swift and safe convictions. David Lomax's appeal will be heard today, and depending on the outcome, we will accept burden of compensation. But, that being said, we were up against a criminal who was determined to make it look as though Lomax had committed the crimes, and in that respect, this has been an unusual case."
"Screen off," Kira said wearily.
"You need your rest," Jimmy said. "Get some sleep. I won't be too far."
Kira watched him leave and then closed her eyes. It had been good to see him and her mother, but to hear that Isabel was doing well and to see her beloved Molly gave her a deep joy and satisfaction. She was exhausted and her head throbbed, so when she heard the door open again, she kept her eyes closed in the hope that whoever it was might go away,
leave her to drift off. She felt the pressure on the bed as the person sat down next to her, and then they began to stroke her hair. "You used to stroke my hair and hold my hand when I was little and I couldn't sleep." That couldn't be Molly, could it? She'd just seen her mother push the wheelchair out. It was a woman's voice, only a whisper, familiar, although somehow she couldn't put her finger on who exactly. She felt so weary. Her mind wasn't functioning the way it used to. She would have to accept that now. "You always cared for me so well. Love like that goes on forever." It couldn't be, surely. Kira didn't want to open her eyes and break the spell. Instead, she wanted to lie there, let everything wash away, forget about Fennig, Tom, Cassandra. The rhythmic stroking of her hair gave her a deep sense of peace. "Thank you for saving my Molly." Kira felt tears of happiness brimming underneath her eyelids. She was finally free of all the guilt. Molly was safe. Fennig was behind bars where he couldn't hurt anyone ever again. It had all been worth it. Kira felt herself falling, falling. "You go to sleep," Emma whispered. "I'm going to look after you now." You have been listening to a Trapeze audiobook, Witness X, written by S.E. Moorhead, read by Madeline Brolly, produced by Douglas Keane. The text is copyright S.E. Moorhead 2019. The recording is copyright 2019 by Orion Publishing Group Limited. For information about other Orion audiobooks, visit the website at orionbooks.co.uk.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.